I've been focusing for about 15 years on relationships in my work. And before that, I worked for about 20 years at Hopkins working with people with severe and persistent mental illness. My husband and I were in our second marriage about 2 years, and we saw the danger signals.
Okay.
And we said, oh, we don't want this to happen again.
Right.
So we asked a good friend, what would you do? What should we do? And she sent us to an Imago therapist. Harville Hendricks founded Imago Therapy. He and his wife, Helen Hunt, worked hard to create this therapy. And they brought in all the famous psychiatrists so that there's cognitive therapy in here, there's behavioral therapy. Freud, Ellis, Satir, Virginia Satir, they're all in there being used. So it's a really rich therapy that Harville made. And if someone wants to read his book to change their life, it's called Getting the Love You Want. My mission is world peace, one couple at a time.
Mm, nice.
Because when we're in relationship in a way that serves both people, it's relaxing, it's inspiring, it's creative, it's free. And if we can do that one couple at a time, then maybe we won't shoot each other anymore.
Yeah, it'll be a party all the time.
I hope so.
Party all the time. Welcome back, podcast listeners, to The Wellness Connection. I have here with us today Kathy Sirota. She is a licensed social worker and an Imago therapist. She's here to share her journey with us today. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for coming to visit us. We would love to hear about your journey along your pathway of finding Imago therapy.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to share it with you and with everybody who's listening.
Yeah, so tell us exactly, what is Imago therapy?
Imago therapy is a relationship therapy to help people come out of frustration and struggling to a sense of authenticity and freedom to be who they are in their relationship, and safety to hear who their partner is.
I like that word, safety. So a lot of times in our relationships, we don't feel so safe.
Yeah.
Is that why people seek out Imago therapy?
Yeah, a lot of people feel like they're walking on eggs, and it gets tiresome. So they come.
So Imago therapy, how long has that been a practice?
It's been around for maybe 30, 40 years, and it's been in my life since 94, and it's all over the world.
That's interesting. And how did you come across Imago therapy?
Well, I was in my second marriage in 1994. I'd been married 2 years. And I realized that the symptoms of my first marriage were coming up in my second one. And so did my husband. And we said, oh, sweetie, let's do something about this. So a friend sent us to an Imago therapist. And I thought, wow, I've come home. This is really important to me. It feels so authentic. Mm-hmm. And my husband said, oh, honey, it's okay. And so we began the journey of being different. And that's the beauty about Imago therapy, is that everybody's different. And we can still stay connected. So my husband and I stayed connected.
That is wonderful. How easy, you make it sound like it was very easy for your husband and you to transition into exploring what Imago therapy was, even though you had not heard anything about it as well. So tell me, how did that journey, how was that?
Well, my gut said I'm with a good person, and my heart said I love my husband, and that those two things really motivated me.
Right. Do you feel like that was the same thing for your husband as well?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
He really loved her.
Oh.
He went back to see her individually for about a year after we stopped.
With your husband and yourself, you started this Imago therapy. What was your first day like?
Well, I had a sense of connection with my husband. Mm-hmm. We went with differences, we were struggling, and I left with a sense of connection and hope.
And hope. So did that happen as soon as you guys walked through that door, or was there some tear-jerking moments in the process?
I think there were some heart moments, because it wasn't in the beginning, but it was in the process of her facilitating us communicating that I felt closer to my husband, and he felt closer to me too.
Mm-hmm. Do you recall that first step, that first day when you both went, aha, and you had that connection?
Yeah, she had us talk to each other about being very authentic, so that we began to talk about what we were struggling with. What is my frustration with you? Let me tell you my frustration with you, and how that tends to make me feel, and the story I make up about you.
Very good.
And what I do when I have those feelings. And it was so basic, it was so gut. It said yes to me.
It said yes to you.
Yeah.
And your husband responded the same way?
He was a little bit less, this is just perfect, and I love the authenticity. He was a quiet man, and I think he felt more vulnerable, and it was harder for him to step into it.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you're sharing that with us, because a lot of times men tend to, they're not verbal about their feelings. They tend to require a little bit more time to kind of bring them out. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. Okay. So thank you.
Are we now?
Yes, you are.
I think our culture is probably changing, and that might be, not be true in the future. But I think it was definitely true for my husband and me. He was born in 32, so he was a man raised when men work hard, but they don't talk too much.
Talk too much, yes. And it's interesting you said you feel like it's changing. Is it more in the millennial stages, or in the X generation, or in the baby boomers?
People come to me generally in their 30s and 40s and 50s.
Interesting.
And I am surprised at how the opposite is true sometimes, that the women don't have the words and the men do.
That is beautiful. So that there's opportunities and openness out there that's going on in our country, in our world, that studies are not necessarily reflecting that, because according to studies, men are not as verbal. And it's nice to hear that that's not necessarily true.
It's nice for me to experience that too.
Yes. So you guys are in the point of crescendo. I'm hearing that you finally connected in the sense of being able to be vulnerable and transparent during your session. Where did you go beyond that point? What did it look like? What did that experience now, once you felt that you guys were vulnerable, where did the next steps go and lead you to?
Well, I think that, just to say, back up a little bit, it was a lot of practice in the office. Mm-hmm. Because we come with a pattern of how to be, and we don't just change overnight. So we practiced a lot talking to each other in the session. And then one session, she pulls out a piece of paper and says, here are some sentence stems. You guys can do this at home. And so we had this idea that we would go home and we would use some of these sentence stems that we were very familiar with from practicing. Mm-hmm. And we would practice at home. Yeah. One of us would say, I feel so frustrated with you right now. Go get those papers. So we went and got those papers and sat in front of each other and tried. And sometimes Jerry'd say, honey, I don't feel any better. And sometimes he'd say, well, it really did work. Because, life isn't perfect. So when we try, sometimes we have to keep trying before we get the results we are looking for.
Yeah, that's most definitely the case. In life itself, it's a trial and error, and we get back up if we choose to. And it sounds like if you choose to, there's something very, very generous at the end of that tunnel, or that journey, should I say?
Yeah.
Yes. So let's talk a little bit. Is there anything else you would like to add on that journey, that personal journey of Imago Therapy that you and your husband shared. I want to really appreciate you sharing with us. Why I'm saying that, because Kathy just, you know, not too long ago lost her partner, her friend, and her lover, and her mate, and yet she's smiling here, right here, talking about her husband and just recalling those very precious moments as she and he went through their journey of developing and enhancing their relationship. So I just wanted to take that moment to really say thank you for sharing with us and imparting a piece of what could be very valuable and important in the community, and how they too can possibly have an enriching experience like you and your husband did. But is there anything else you would like to share with the community about your personal journey with Imago Therapy?
Thank you. Thank you for acknowledging our history together and my husband's recent death. So my husband got dementia, and even though he got dementia, he would remember those cue words that we learned in Imago. And reflecting back what our partner says, especially if our partner's upset. And he continued to do that to the very end.
Wow. That has given me goosebumps. That's amazing. And I'm not sure if the audience understands dementia and how it slowly potentially robs the memories of an individual. And so that's very impactful to hear how Kathy shared with us that in his dementia stages, he was able to recall that those very key words that were tender to both of them in their relationship. So thank you. Oh, wow.
That's it really says how important, and you know, like I think Jerry would say, if it works, don't fix it. And it really works for me to reflect and mirror my wife, because it makes her happy. And then he felt powerful.
That's amazing. That is amazing.
So from 94 until 2003, I continued to work at Johns Hopkins. I loved my job. And I had another job that was working with people that were divorcing. And Imago has some training for people to help those who are divorcing and becoming single. So I took that training. And my former therapist called me and said, I heard you took that training. Do you want to be an Imago therapist? I said, well, I'd love to. She said, well, I'm leaving town. Do you want my practice? And I said, yes.
So you just came up, huh? You just laid it in. You had built-in clients and everything, huh?
I did. The funny part is that's what I thought. I'd have built-in clients. She had a very small practice. She actually lived in Philly. And so when she told her patients that she was leaving, they said, well, we don't want another therapist. And I ended up with one client.
Oh, Lord.
And you figured that out after you had left your job.
After I had left my job.
All right.
I said, that's okay.
And what was your job at Hopkins again?
I was working in a clinic at Hopkins with people with persistent mental illness.
And you were working as a social worker?
I was.
All right. Awesome. And you were good. He was like, well, you know, I'm just going to step on now and do this thing. And then, nope.
Nope. I said, yep.
Well, you said, yep. And then all the clients said, nope.
All the clients said, nope. And I said, yep.
Okay.
And then I started training because my former therapist recommended yet a Simon in D.C. to do the training for me. And so I joined her training group, and I fell in love with her. I fell more in love with Imago, and I built my skill. There's a lot to do in that training, videotaping and our peers making comments. And it was beautiful. It was a real time of growth for me.
That's amazing.
Professionally.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. So in this journey of transitioning into the Imago therapist, it was lovely. Although you had a few what?
I did have some surprises.
So that's very good to know. Now tell us more, because for you to be so now even more entrenched in this practice of yours of imago therapy, mm-hmm. what made it more, you know, more of a hunger for you? Because that's what I hear. You're like, I was happy. I left my job. I only had one client, but I was still happy. It was for me. And going through the practice and the training even confirmed it even further. This is for me. Yeah. So tell us about that.
Well, in the first training that I had, the trainer said, forget pathology. And of course, mainstream medicine is got pathology. And I loved that, because there's a sense in imago therapy of holding a space that there's nobody that's sick, there's nobody that's wrong, it's nobody's fault. If they could do better, they would. There are people coming for some help.
Wow. When you describe that, that sounds like total neutral compassion, just being transparent and naked, sort of, because it doesn't matter how you look good.
You look good. And my space that I hold is they're good people, and they have good intentions, mm-hmm. even though it might not feel that way to their partner. And with their good intentions, they might need some skill.
Amazing, yes.
And so they come, and they learn.
Well, I think just the fact that they show up, and if they're showing up for that, not at the end of a, you know, if they're not being violently compelled to come and they show up, it's a demonstration of goodwill and good intentions. Because, you know, if you don't want to do that, then you probably won't show up for that.
It's true. And usually there's a draggie and a dragger.
Right. Well, I mean, even if there is a draggie and a dragger, it's still, there is a certain line that you care enough to be drugged there. Because at some point in the relationship, I don't care. I mean, you're just not going to make me do it if I don't want to do it. Like, even if you can say what you want, there is always this line. So even if there is some protest, the fact that they showed up, grudgingly or not, is something of a demonstration. Sometimes you just got to put on a show. You know, it's not even as big a deal as you making it, but you just got to put the show on, and then you show up, you know, because mm-hmm. that's just the way that you're used to being.
Yeah.
So. Yes, yes.
And I'll add to that, they're very brave.
Mm-hmm.
They're very brave to come.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
Because as you said, there's vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
They become much more real than they are at home.
Yes, yes. Now that's interesting. They become much more real than they are at home. That's pretty impactful, because here we having to speak in front of someone we're getting to know, but we're not quite sure who they are. And you're with your partner, that maybe there's some unsettling issues between the two, and yet they become more open? Tell me about that.
They do become more open. And it's a sequential kind of experience of having them blossom like a rose, opening up to more and more of what their issues are. But even in the first session, there's a sense of blossoming as they begin to talk about what's safe at that point to talk about that's hard.
Mm-hmm.
In the first session, they also tell me their love story, so we try to keep it balanced.
That is so interesting. That is a lot of information on the first session. So there is a uniqueness about this practice that I'm now feeling from this conversation, because when most people go to counseling, it's pretty stiff in that room. You know, it's not, they're not, hey, let's tell our love story, or let's talk about, you know, when I first smelled the flowers and I saw her face. That's usually not the case. So what is the uniqueness? Is there steps involved? Is there a unique setting the stage in the first day of the environment that makes everyone feel like they can express those thoughts immediately?
Yeah, I think that word is safety. So in those first couple sessions, we're building safety so that they can dive deep.
Mm-hmm. And how much of your role do you provide in creating that?
Oh, I think that it's a big percentage for me, okay, because I'm the one that's setting the scene. They're kind of receiving the safety that I set up. Like, instead of saying to, let's say, the woman, what does he frustrate you with? I don't say that in the first session. My question is, please name three behaviors that you think frustrate your husband.
I like that. You threw me off with that.
It's taking responsibility for herself, and it's the first step of moving from being the victim to someone with power.
That's it. Wow. Yes. Mm-hmm. Shifting the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Yes, shifting the atmosphere.
And it's, she'll pick, I'm still using her as an example, so she'll pick three behaviors that she feels safe to bring up that she does.
That is interesting, yes.
So it's building the safety. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what you're open to talking about today.
Very nice. Okay, very good. Okay. Now, we were touching a little bit on the process. So you say in your sessions they build.
Yeah.
Okay. First, safety. Okay. And the next step, can you give us an idea of the next step that will be created in such a session?
Well, safety sure is first. And then the second one is embracing frustration. To be able to not just withstand their frustration with each other, but embracing it. Because frustration has gold hiding in it, we say. Mm-hmm. There's intelligence in frustration because someone's need is not being met. They're frustrated.
So there's, when you say that, there's some validity there. It's not just, I want my way, or it's not just me. There's some reality there.
Right. Okay. Both people have needs that are unmet and longings as a result. So we spend some time being available to embracing frustration. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then over time, as someone can begin, or the couple can begin to embrace frustration, what can we do that's different? Because insight and understanding is wonderful.
Yes.
But they're coming for change. And so we look for ways in which the couple can change their behavior. And the couple really makes it up. I don't. Mm-hmm. I just set the environment for them to be creative with empathy and understanding and creativity and love. So they start just small with a behavior that is counter to the feeling of the frustration. If I feel unimportant, then what could I ask my partner to do that would help me to feel important?
Nice.
And usually she'll ask for three behaviors and then he gets to pick one.
Oh, so the partner gets to pick which behavior they want really for that person to share with them.
Right, okay. And if they can't even do that one the way she's asked for it, then they have a conversation about how he can do it so that he can feel truly engaged in that and like he doesn't have to have anything in return. I'm just going to give this to you and I can do it. It's attainable.
Very good. And I like that because a lot of times in relationships we put demands. I want you to do it and I want you to do it this way. This will make me happy.
Yeah.
Where what I'm hearing here, it's an exchange of what the desire is and then the partner's saying, well, I can meet that desire, but I can meet it in this way. This makes me feel engaged and feel like it's a part of me giving to you.
And I'm not demanded to. Mm-hmm. I am powerful because mm-hmm. I can pick it and I can do it.
Very nice. Very good. Okay. Has there been any research to support the outcomes?
You know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't know that answer, but I do know that in my practice, I have my own research, and I would say about 95% of the couples that come to me leave still together.
Wow, that's pretty strong.
And I would say about, that's 5% left, and I would say about 4% of those leave a very conscious way, so that they have a sense of respect for each other. And it's so important, because usually there are children involved. And research says if there continues to be fighting at divorce and after, it's probably the most harmful thing for kids.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely.
So they leave with a sense of authenticity, with appreciation for what they've been able to do, and for clarity about setting the boundary that they need to separate.
That's right. That's very good information.
So that just leaves 1%. They just wild out, huh? Like, ah.
Sometimes they leave the office and don't come back.
Right. Like, ah. Uh-huh. I told you, bring me here, talk to this.
Mm-hmm. Let me get out of here.
All right. Here we go. Oh. Extra frustration. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I think that, yeah, if someone... Yeah, some relationships, some people just don't need to be together. They need to figure out how to make that happen too. And if there's a healthy way to get clear on that, if, you know, when people realize that they are not able or willing to, you know, meet the other person's needs or honor the things that, then you got to figure out a safe way out of that. So, going back to the idea of safety, it's like sometimes I feel like, you know, not having a safe way to communicate is a big part of the gap that it seems like you're feeling with this approach. And sometimes the thing that is, there are other things that are not safe in the relationship that can be surfaced once someone is speaking openly, that reveal, like, well, you know, if that's, this is who, I understand more who you are now. Mm-hmm. And that's fine, but not for the kid though. The kid got to be on his way, because you know.
Well, I think the way I relate to what you're saying is that I hold myself as an imago therapist not to keep couples together, but to have each person realize their full potential in themselves and relationally, and how that works out is up to them. Mm-hmm. So you're right. Somebody might find out more about themselves and about the other person and realize, you know, I did love you, but I'm not sure I love you in a way that I want to stay with you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That leads me into my next question, Kathy. Who is imago therapy for? Is it just for couples?
I would say that most people come and they're couples, but I have seen brothers. I have seen a mother and her daughter. So anyone in relationship can use this therapy.
That's very nice. I mean, that's very impactful for a lot of people in the community, because a lot of times discord is brought because of unfinished business in their past or in their present, you know, environment, and it affects and it rolls off into their, you know, couples or their personal relationships with other people. So that's very good to hear that imago therapy is not just for couples, husband and wife. It's for creativeness in mothers, daughters, fathers, sons, you know, daughter, father.
It's creativeness.
Friends.
Yeah, it's creativeness in relationship.
Yes, yes.
Whoever you're in relationship with.
That is really, I like that. That's very powerful.
Is imago name, is that the name of the person, or is it an acronym? Like, what does the word actually mean?
Imago means complete picture of intimacy.
See, now we needed to get that out there.
That was awesome.
The complete picture of intimacy. What language is that from?
I think it's Latin.
Okay.
So complete picture of intimacy, and what this is built on is the idea that when babies, before they even talk, they know what an intimate relationship feels like, what it tastes like, what it sounds like. And that's the brain imprint.
Yes, I can agree. I mean, being in the womb, I'm sure they know what that means or feel have that feeling, because one of the important things when a child is in born early, premature, even to full birth, one of the things they push in the, you know, neonatal area is comfort and, you know, actually lying on the mom's chest.
Yeah.
Letting the baby hear the breathing, the sound of the voice, even the warmth of the body. So very powerful what you just said. I just could relate that to a woman being pregnant and having a child inside the womb, and they're looking for that relationship when they come out.
They do. They look for that relationship when they come out. So falling in love is very biological.
Yes.
We don't know their bags. You know, everybody comes with baggage. And we don't know their bags. We
fall. Samsonite. Samsonite.
Kryptonite.
All day, Samsonite.
Yeah, that's right.
With the wheels in the rolly bag. A rolly bag.
Mm-hmm.
Comes everywhere.
It comes everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Even into our relationship.
I'm sitting here reflecting on all the important and powerful information. I mean, I'm learning more. I had actually did a little, you know, some research on Imago therapy, and I was attracted to it immediately because of the base and the purpose of it, and how the steps help to nurture the relationship into greater communication, because without communication, we cannot connect, either physically, emotionally, or spiritually, even in the words, you know, in language. So that the point of it being all about communication was a major attraction for me immediately, because that's what normally is lacking in relationships. And just earlier today, I had said something to a coworker, and the delivery was not the way I intended it, but it was taken, and it was released. And thank goodness that, you know, the person knew a little bit about my history, knowing who I am as a person. They didn't take it too much to their heart, but they most definitely froze for a minute and was taken back about the statement. And I realized, from the physical response, you know, that I must have said something that just didn't quite resonate with that person. Let me go do some homework and discovery. So I first thought about what I said and how I actually said it. What was my intent? Was it to say what I said, or was it not? So I discovered it was not. I had something going on in my mind right away. It was a lot of dynamics going on for that quick moment. And I just actually just spoke out after saying two sentences in my mind. I actually said the last of the third sentence to her. So when it came out, it was like...
Came out of the side of your neck.
Right, exactly.
Talking outside of your neck.
Yes.
Throw an EQ on that, take some of that bass out of there.
So 76% of communication is tone of voice and body language. And we really take care of the unintended, hurtful words, because we do a lot of exploring in the therapy about how we feel, so that we become more aligned in ourselves before we say the words. And then the technique of the communication, of course, is there. It's a big deal. And then there's also having this alignment and harmony inside of ourselves to be able to say the words that really match our inside.
Nicely said. Nice. Thank you, Kathy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was, I'm glad I shared that experience with you.
I feel like if you are that mindful, you probably say a lot less.
Oh, I suppose. You know,
like every time you're going to say something, you're like, if you're that in tune and that present, you're like, okay. you got the me. Like, you know, you got to get the pitch right. You got to get in there. And like some, you know, is it, you know, there's a lot of filters you got to go through before you say something to someone. Is it true? Okay. Is it kind? Is it necessary?
Yes.
You know, like, what's the intent behind it? There's a lot of filters that if you're not careful and you let one of them pass, I mean, you can destroy someone just telling them the truth and right. then blame them for not being able to take it.
You know, in relationship, and blame them.
Right.
So in relationship, there's usually one person in the relationship that doesn't go through those filters very much, and they say a lot. And so the therapy helps them to go through those filters so that they can have clarity. And in essence, then, they have more power in their relationship because their partner isn't tuning them out so much.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I like that word, power. Yeah. So a lot of times that's usually our frustration because we feel like we're not being heard or we don't have any value in this relationship a lot of times. So that word power is very, I don't know, important, I think. And what I mean by power just is not to overpower someone, it's just to have power and impact in that person's space, you know?
Right, and even for the person who has a hard time saying words, that Imago Therapy communication skill can help them to have words to say, because they're the one that has so many filters, they end up not saying so much. Right. So that there's more balance in the communication between the two people, rather than having an over talker and an under talker.
Very good point. Yes, yes. My first husband wasn't a major talker. He would go I said, "Are you listening?" Then why aren't you saying anything? No, I'm just listening. And that's how it went. And I'm saying, okay. Now I felt like the bad person because here I had a whole line of things to share and say.
Yeah.
And all he went was,
So the goal of Imago Therapy is to make that space safe so that when we speak, our partner can actually hear us and have empathy and understanding. Maybe delight in what we say.
Very nice, delight. Very nice.
Delight is a pretty high bar.
It is. we head for it.
Yeah, it's a high bar. You were talking about like that in love part and the timing of not being able to see those backs. So you mentioned that, and my question or comment was sort of geared towards that in terms of the timing or the stage of the relationship when this typically, when the people you've worked with have the most success with it. Like, I don't know if you are just in the infatuation stage of the relationship, you're like, hey, you know, let's go to therapy and learn how to communicate with each other. I bet that's pretty rare. because usually there is some sort of instigating incident before a person comes. So in terms of timing and phase of the relationship, when do people typically engage in this type of work?
Well, there are six stages of relationship, and the first one is the romantic stage when we're madly in love and we all agree with everything and we can't spend enough time together. And then the second stage is the disillusionment and the disappointment that you don't really agree with me anymore. And then the power struggle starts.
That's power struggle stage three, or is that part
stage
of stage two?
Stage two.
Okay.
Yeah. So they usually come in the power struggle stage. Yeah.
And what's the next stage?
The next stage is for a couple to make a decision cognitively, because the affect is so heavy. It's like going on, this anger and this pain and this suffering and this blaming. And so the third stage is to make a decision cognitively. I'm going to try to give up blaming. And I'm going to be curious instead. And then communication really helps couples around that curiosity, because instead of blaming or putting them in that bag like you're arrogant, they can ask a question. Why did you talk so much at that party? I want to put you in the arrogant bag, but really, more of me wants to be curious.
All right. I'm curious. Why are your socks on the floor? Just out of curiosity.
Exactly.
And the hamper's right. Why is your socks on the floor? Just curious.
And in therapy, then we go to what?
That's kind of passive aggressive. That tone, the tone wasn't right for that. I get that the tone wasn't right for that.
But it's so important that you bring it up, because really, it's not the socks on the floor.
Right.
And in therapy, we find out what is going on that I'm upset about the socks on the floor.
Other than the fact that they're always there.
Yeah, right. For remember, in the romantic stage, oh, look, your socks are on the floor. You're so free. You don't even have to put them in a drawer. Right. And then it begins to frustrate them. And then they have a feeling like, he doesn't care about me. I'm not important. And then we're going down the steps inside that person to find out what's really going on.
Yep, that's correct.
So at three, we decided, all right, stop blaming. So you say a lot of times people come during a power struggle stage.
Stage two.
Which is stage two. Do some people just never get past that, and it just kind of all the rest of the stages are kind of compressed into one sort of blow up, or does everything kind of typically go through this arc even without the intervention of someone coming to, you know, address the issues?
Well, there is the 5%,
right?
And they stay in the struggle stage, and if they're lucky and they do the work, it's really construction work, it's hard work, then they move to make that decision to be curious. And then they do the work, which is learning to talk together and have understanding and empathy and new ideas and creativity toward feeling free and accepted in their relationship, so that they do the work. And then the next stage is realizing, it's really not about you and the socks on the floor. It's really about me feeling unimportant. And I need to address that. And then the fourth stage is real love, which is, I still don't like your socks on the floor, but I do feel important.
Mm-hmm. That's stage four.
Mm-hmm. That's that MJB, that Mary J. Blige. That's going to go into here. That fourth stage, the real love stage. Okay. It sounds like a self-valuing stage.
It really is, because we can blame our partner that they don't value us. But really, we're struggling with valuing ourselves. Yeah. When we figure that out, then we can fall in love with ourselves and our partner. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have four. Go ahead.
Stage four sounds like a healing stage.
Oh, they're all healing.
Yeah.
They're all healing,
yeah,
really.
But it sounds like that's where everyone's healing at. I didn't even realize I had that challenge. I was holding on to that hurt or that pain.
Right.
Wow, okay, now I can heal myself, and so everyone else can heal too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got me.
Right up.
Stage five.
Well, really, the romantic stage is stage one. Deciding to be curious is stage two. Stage three is doing the work and learning communication, and thusly being more understanding and empathetic. And that's three, that's four. And then five is continuing to do the work so that I realize it's not about you, it's about me. And then stage six is real love. Mm-hmm. So it's really stage six.
Mm-hmm. Stage six is real love.
Okay, that's the Mary Jane. Mm-hmm. For you.
So what is
I just wanted to address this.
Do we have a phone?
Yeah.
It could be mine.
Oh, word. Didn't we talk about this? It's okay. It's okay.
It's easy. We won't look at. No, I made sure.
Oh, I wanted to be Karen so bad. So ooh. She came in here talking. Phones. Like, okay. Okay.
And then I got to send that ringer.
Okay.
I did.
So stage one, is turn off your phone. No, that's stage three. Why is your phone ringing all the time? I don't understand. I'm just curious. Didn't we talk about this?
Oh, the phone.
How can, oh, yeah.
Hell, it's a big deal.
The phone is a big deal.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah, that's a big deal.
It's so funny you say
so disrespectful.
Because you go, didn't we talk about it? But that's part of that whole process, too, because once you
way off, Mike. I mean, at least come closer.
Yeah, come closer. That's what I was telling you, to come closer.
I was talking to her. Oh. I was talking. You're good. I was...
Mm-hmm. No, when Gerard said, then we talk about this.
Yeah, and it's a whole nother mic right there. I asked you if you want me to mic you up.
But that's interesting he mentions that, because even you're going through the process, a lot of times the expectations that we create for ourselves are still there. And okay, so it should work tomorrow, right? So, you know, they'll do that one thing that you talk about that irritates you, and they're doing well for a while. And because we all are human, we go back to our comfort zones and what we know and what we're comfortable doing, especially when everything else is going on in the world. We go back to the comfortable spot, and we do that thing again. And then you go, didn't we talk about this? And then it makes the person sometimes feel even more frustrated, because you were only pretending, because you were acting like you were getting better, and you're not. You're just your same person, yeah. You know?
So what you're saying is really important, and it happens almost with every couple, is that they learn a new way of being together and communicate together, and they go back to the old way. And it is more painful than it was originally, because they know there's a better way.
Yeah, so with that happening, how do you redirect them in the therapy session? Do we at that point begin over again with the feeling safe, the safe process, and then practicing, the points of how we speak with the STEM statements? How does that work?
Sure, the STEM statements are so important at that point, because it can lead them back to understanding themselves, and why did I step back there?
I like that. Understanding oneself. That's where a lot of the healing has to occur.
And the partner's listening.
Mm-hmm.
My partner is going inside to a deeper place to figure herself out or himself out, and I'm here learning too. It feels vulnerable. It's actually a wonderful way to make love.
Yes, I can imagine. I have to put that into practice.
You were talking about that sort of the relapse and that cycle of coming back. It's a great opportunity.
Yes.
It seems like it's a great opportunity, because especially when you become aware of your own tendency towards that yourself, and then you can kind of give the other person the grace of understanding that, you know, this is a process that we just always gonna, this is just like taking a bath, you know, you just gotta do it every day, you know, and if you miss a day or two, it's gonna stink, and you just gotta clean it up,
right?
And we're still okay, you just gotta maintain it. It's not a surgery and a intervention of that type, because there's no pathology there. It's just a new habits of of communication.
Mm-hmm. Very good point, Jerry, because when you were saying that, it's, and bringing in the point of safety, having that experience of, well, didn't we go over that?
Yeah.
And then coming back around and building that momentum to a point where they feel that point of healing to begin again, that experience in itself will strengthen the relationship, because we went through that riffraff of a storm, but we regrouped ourselves and we are back on path again. So a lot of times, like with any habit or any forming or new introducing of a habit, is knowing that the storm will pass and that we're all going to be safe.
Yes, we're all going to be safe. And it's very humbling to fall back to the old pattern. Like, I can do that again. Look at me. And the partner can have some understanding about that. And I can too. I often will say to couples, thank you for showing me how you go back. One of the things that helps with that is to name the dance, because they have an emotional dance that creates this struggle. They have a pattern, and we name it. Somebody named theirs hit and run. And so if somebody feels like they just got hit, they can just turn to their partner right in the middle of it and say, hey, ouch, did we just do hit and run? I feel like I got hit. So that they can begin to laugh at themselves, mm-hmm, or bring right. some creativity and fun to it.
Right. Yes. Well, yeah, maybe call it the Dougie. Yeah. Yeah, it's like, hey, teach me how to Dougie. If you say, if you're going to make it, bring some lightness to it, you know, actually, I could see some motion-based therapy in that, where they actually, like, you know, do the moves.
Yes.
That would be fun. It's like, oh, you don't even got to say nothing. You just be like, uh-oh. Here we go again.
When I invite them to name their dance, I say, right. You know, you can pull on your ear, stick your finger in your nose,
cabbage
or whatever.
Patch. Yeah, cabbage patch. Uh-oh. I think that would be, I would be willing to actually come and teach you a few of the more, like, salient dance moves and keep them so that when you take a person through this, when they start naming their dance, you have them up doing it.
Thank you so much. I can hardly okay. wait.
I mean, too bad this is not a video podcast, but I was just
next
doing
time.
The hype and the floss and the nay-nay. I think that would be a wonderful thing.
Yes, it is a wonderful thing.
So that's my gift to you, okay. that you can add to your practice. Yeah.
And if you can't come, I'll just do a video of you.
Like, there you go.
Yeah. Just put it up on the screen.
That's it.
And I would love to see you do the nay-nay.
Oh, I could do all of them. But that's not what we're here for, right?
Just stay tuned for the video.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's awesome. Because I think that there's never been a time in any relationship that I've been in that where there wasn't, where some laughter didn't help somehow.
Oh, yeah.
Because everything seems so serious. And as long as it's not at the other person, because that can backfire.
That can.
But if you were able to laugh together at something, then that's always a positive thing. Because then, you know, it releases a lot of tension.
Mm-hmm. It does.
Releases endorphins. And with the endorphins being released, it then calms the body, the spirit. So, yes.
I mean, I think that every relationship I've been in has been saved at some point or another by, boy, you so crazy. Probably about, I don't know, dozens of times, boy, you so crazy has saved many a relationship in my lifetime.
Yeah, of course.
Because that is usually one of the foundations of, the things that was a point that brought us together somehow.
Yes, you got it.
And a lot of times we do tend to lose who we were and become unrecognizable to the other person. Mm-hmm. So if there's, you know, if there's space for them to see you the way they saw you, it doesn't hurt.
Mm-hmm. It sure doesn't. In fact, it helps. So oftentimes when they tell me their love story, someone will say, well, I fell in love with him because he was so funny and fun.
And he's sitting there like...
Right. And he's as serious as he can be.
Right.
Right. So it's bringing back what the loves are. Absolutely.
Nice.
That's one of the reasons for me to hear their love story. What are their strengths?
Very nice.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they're listening or... they're hearing it too, or reliving it as they're sharing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see it in their body and their voices, hear it in their voices.
Nice. Any other questions you have?
I'm cool.
Any other questions you have? Rachel joined us for a bit or so. Do you have any other questions, Rachel?
I do have one. I wanted to ask you. In the communication process, are there any particular ways or techniques that are used in the process of once one shares the information, the partner's validating that they understand what has been shared?
Yeah, there's structure to the communication. So in the communication, first of all, there's a sender and receiver. So the sender's sending the message and they have the opportunity to feel deeply heard, listened to. And then the receiver is the one who's listening and they have the opportunity to feel empathy. And then they switch, so the sender becomes the receiver. And as they're communicating, there are steps in the communication so that in the first part, the sender is being mirrored by the receiver. And they're talking about their frustration and story I make up, you're a jerk, you're selfish. And then I feel unimportant, or I feel invisible, or I feel smothered. And then what I do when I feel those feelings, I get glassy-eyed and go to the computer, or I start screaming. And then the second part of that communication happens where the receiver says, let me see if I can get most of what you said. And they summarize what the sender said. And they ask them, did I get most of it? Yeah, you got most of it. Or no, let me help you get just that one part. And then they mirror that. Now, did I get most of it? Yeah, you got most of it. So then the sender picks out something. No, the receiver, I'm sorry. The receiver picks out something that the sender said that makes sense to them, even if they don't agree with it. Mm-hmm. And the sentence they say is, you make sense to me about feeling invisible when I walk past you when I come home from work, because I do that. And then the next thing they do is to say, and I imagine that you feel right now heard, maybe still hurt. Is that the way you're feeling? So they're moving into a different level in their relationship about feeling, because that when we feel something, then we behave. So if we understand how we feel, how our partner feels, it really gives us the gold to be in relationship.
Where does the dancing come in that process?
They're dancing all the time.
Because the jerk is a dance. So I was just curious if that was incorporated. So when you're a jerk, do they do the jerk?
Yeah, they do the jerk. Yeah. They sure do.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Thank you.
I think that was a great demonstration of kind of what that process looks like.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good.
Very good demonstration. What's your mission as a Imago therapist? Do you have a mission?
I do have a mission.
Would you share with us?
My mission is world peace, one couple at a time.
Mm, nice.
Because when we're in relationship in a way that serves both people, it's relaxing. It's inspiring. It's creative. It's free. And if we can do that one couple at a time, then maybe we won't shoot each other anymore.
Yeah, it'll be a party all the time.
I hope so.
Party all the time.
And if it's a jerk every once in a while, then we'll just dance to the jerk and get back to the party.
Sounds like What are some key takeaway points you want to leave with the community?
I'd like to leave that love is possible in relationship, mm-hmm. and that there are all kinds of ways to learn how to be loving, and Imago is one way, and we offer that. And there are other ways, too, that people learn. And that communication is so important so that we can put into words what we really have inside to share, have it come outside with our words, and have that sense of loving power.
Very good. Again, Kathy Sirota, we want to thank you very much for spending some time with us.
How do people connect with you? Are you accepting clients or?
Well, I'm full right now. I've got a waiting list, but there are Imago therapists all over the country, all over the world.
Oh, we're not trying to hook them up. We're trying to hook you up. Oh. You got to get on the waiting list, yo. How do you do that?
I have a website. You can go there. It's sirotak.com, S-I-R-O-T as in Tom, A-K for Kathy, .com. I'll see you there.
Very nice. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much for coming to visit us, sharing with the community, imparting such a very powerful practice that anyone who has interest can most definitely encounter and join with. Thank you, Kathy.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you for listening, you guys out there.
All right. The Wellness Connection podcast is brought to you by Hail Wellness, a social and interactive platform where we connect our community to local businesses, organizations, and individuals who have tools, services, and programs that nurture the mind, body, and spirit. Engage in awareness by taking our free wellness assessment and take first steps towards optimizing your wellness. Visit wellnessconnection.health.